Thank you, Jean-Jacques, for the invitation and everyone for coming. Thank you for holding this in English, because my French does not exist. But given that, I'll try to be clear. I know firsthand the dangers of misinterpreted meaning. I did this drawing for a paper in Current Biology last year, and I got all kinds of trouble for it because I was recapitulating the patriarchy and suggesting some linear view of evolution, and I just wanted to do Abbey Road, man. So I'll try to be clear as I go through stuff today. What a fun conference to be part of. As Jean-Jacques talked about this morning, and as we've seen, everything is energy, right? In terms of, we think about evolution, life is just a game of turning energy into kids, and so everything that we do, activities that we can see, as well as the activities that are beneath the surface that we don't see, are driven by energy, and so it touches on everything. So a conference on energy is a conference on everything. And these are the questions that we've touched on already today, and will continue to do, and stuff I've worked on in my own work, and it's really just all about, you know, how do we evolve to burn energy? As a couple people have mentioned, my work over the last couple of years has been looking at this from an empirical experimental view, trying to go out and it's moved beyond doing estimates of energy expenditures and actually measure energy expenditures, the total calories burned per day, in humans and apes, other primates, and within the humans across a bunch of different populations. And so it's been really fun to see Dr. Garcia's work and Kazawa's work this morning, fellow experimentalists. Dan's done a lot of this too. And you can see that from their presentations, the kind of cool work, cool places you can go with this experimental approach. So I'm going to take this experimental, empirical view of measuring calories per day in humans and other apes, and I'm going to tackle three related issues today. The first is this big question in human evolution, which is, how do we have such an extravagant lifestyle, right? So humans, unlike the other apes, we have big brains, which are really costly. And the rule in biology is if you have one costly trait, you've got to make it up by having some other trait reduced. But we don't have that. Humans have big brains, long lives, which means we're investing in maintenance. We have higher fertility rates than the other apes. And so the question becomes, how did we evolve to have this really energetically costly strategy, right? I call it the human adaptive suite. So we're the highest brain size, highest lifespan, highest birth rate. These are all expensive traits. We're also the most physically active, as Dan mentioned earlier today. How do we do it, right? And so this is a project we did a couple years ago now with Steve Ross and Mary Brown and a bunch of others looking at energy expenditure in the apes and other humans. And I use this as a study to start on because I remember when I was going through school as an undergraduate, we all knew, quote unquote, in the 90s, that energy budgets were just a matter of how big you are, that there wasn't a whole lot of interesting evolution happening in metabolic rates, that your metabolic rate was just set by your body size. But that was in the absence of data. So we could tackle that question and say, well, is it really true that all the apes have the same energy budgets? Or are there interesting evolutionary stories going on within our evolutionary family? And so we measured total energy expenditures in a bunch of apes, all of the genera, so bonobos and chimps and gorillas and orangutans, as well as a bunch of sedentary humans. And Jean-Jacques showed this earlier today. But what we find, really, this is exciting for us to find, is that if we look at fat-free mass, so as body size gets bigger, daily energy expenditure, the calories you burn, goes up for everybody, but humans, Homo, are higher than Pan, chimpanzees and bonobos, higher than gorillas, higher than Pongo. And so everybody, as body size goes up, energy per day goes up, but humans have evolved a higher metabolic rate, a sort of step change above what the other apes have done. This is another way of looking at that data. Here is total energy expenditure, total calories a day in red. The darker area is the part spent on basal metabolic rate. And you can say humans have higher metabolic rates in terms of total calories per day, but also in terms of the energy spent just on keeping our organs happy than any of the other apes. We don't have BMR data for gorillas. Interestingly, another benefit of doing this kind of work and stuff, things that Chris Kazawa and Carl have shown earlier in other work, humans are also extraordinarily fat, right? So isn't that interesting? We often think of higher metabolic rates. If you boost your metabolism, you can keep your fat low, right? We're diet books always promise you this. If we go and increase your metabolic rate, the calories burned, you'll have less fat. Well, that's not true, by the way. But it's also, evolutionarily, we've increased our metabolic rates while also increasing our amount of fat. So this is a really fun perspective we can take, taking this sort of experimental empirical approach to understanding evolved ecologies. So there's a story in every one of these species. Orangutans have really low net expenditures, lower than any other mammal ever measured except for sloths for their body size. Oh, and pandas. We now know that pandas also have low expenditures. We think this might be a response to food shortages that it hit them unpredictably in their native habitats. Chimps, interestingly, have really low fat percentages. A chimp idling away in a zoo carries less than 10% body fat. That's the same as an Olympic athlete, right? Wouldn't we love to know what's genetically different about them that allows them to have this keep lean even when they're not that active? And you can eat as much as they want. But since this is a conference on humans, the human story seems to be an interesting sort of syndrome, metabolic syndrome. So humans have high energy. We also have high fat. We think fat is probably one sort of evolutionary strategy to prevent starvation, because if you have high metabolic rates, you also put yourself at higher risk of shortfall and starvation. Sharing food, which is what hunting and gathering is all about, also helps do that. So we think that this is an evolved set of strategies to keep metabolic rates high, while at the same time protecting against starvation. And high metabolic rates are what allows us to fuel big brains, high fertilities, high activity levels. Here's a Hadza woman with her grandchild sharing food, and he's gonna, you know, he's nice and chubby kid and active and everything else, and his mother's off foraging. Okay, so that's thing one I want to tell you is humans are the high energy ape. And isn't that interesting? Because we often think about evolution as favoring thrifty solutions, economic solutions. But here we seem to have increased. So are we thrifty or are we extravagant? And the second thing I'll talk about before I get there, this is where we're going to go, but before I get there, I'm going to mention what Steve just talked about a bit, which is what effect does lifestyle have? Because this is another area that's been really surprising as we've explored human ecology and human energetics from this work. And so, again, about 5 years or so ago, we didn't have any measurements of total energy expenditures for pretty much any human populations outside of Western contexts, outside of Europe and the U.S. and other developed countries. There were a handful, but not many, and nothing for hunter-gatherers. And so with Dave Reichlin and Brian Wood, I've spent the last few years getting total energy expenditure measurements from these guys, the Hadza, who Dan has already mentioned. They're a hunting and gathering group. They don't have any crops or machines or domesticated animals or plants. They're very physically active. Women walk sometimes up to 9 kilometers a day, 6 kilometers a day on average, looking for food. Very active digging, often with a kid on your back the whole day, or collecting berries is also, you know, walking for is plenty of work. Men walk even more, hunting. Men also climb. So this is a guy, a Hadza man, walking past this tree he just got honey from. You see these baobab trees in this part of Africa scarred up, because what they do is the men will pound these pegs into the tree to climb up and chop into the limbs to get honey. Honey is actually 15 to 20% of their diet. Huge amounts of carbohydrates, simple sugar, actually. Kind of interesting to think about. So a very physically active group. And again, as Steve mentioned in the last talk, we used to think that if you're very, very physically active, that means you must be burning many calories per day. And that's what we expected to find when we went and did this work. In fact, this is what we find. So here's total energy expenditure, calories per day. Here's fat-free mass. This is the best measure of body size, but you can use whatever measure you like. And the Hadza are right here with all the other, with you and me and everyone else in a westernized sedentary population. So there's just no difference between an energy expenditure between the Hadza and the U.S. and Europe. Okay, well, is that maybe the Hadza are just weird? As Dan said, they live in a degraded habitat. That's just one population. Maybe they're the strange ones. And so I was worried about that too. So we've gone and tried to get some more data for other similar populations. Here's work that my postdoc Sam Urlacher, fantastic researcher, has done with a population called the Shuar. He's interested in growth trade-offs with expenditure and activity, and so he's looked at this energy budgets in kids. And this is a very, they do a lot of foraging, a lot of hunting and gathering. They also have a bit of domesticated crops in a very different ecology than the Hadza, and it's the same story. So if we look at total energy per day, fat-free mass, this is Shuar, kids in green, US, UK, here, everybody's the same. Right, so these kids, even though we know they're very active, look at, my kid won't even carry his own bag to school, but here's this kid working hard with his parent, collecting food, same energy expenditure as everybody else. So, okay, well, maybe the Shuar are weird. How about the Chimani? So the Chimani are another population, right, that we've now have data from, similar to the Shuar Amazon River Basin, very physically active. We have measurements of activity from them. I'm going to show you the data a little bit differently for these guys. But here, just to show you across populations what this can look like, here's physical activity, minutes per day, measured with an accelerometer, so like a Fitbit kind of device that measures how much you're moving every day. The Hadza, moving a lot, 2 hours a day of movement, vigorous movement. The Chimani, similarly. And the rest of these populations, Japan, Ghana, Netherlands, Seychelles, South Africa, Jamaica, ranked in terms of activity level for men and women. Well, what about their total energy expenditures? Here's what this looks like. And this is all adjusted for body size, for fat-free mass specifically. And you see it's all over the map. There's no relationship here between the high activity groups and the high expenditure groups. There just is no relationship. So that's, as Steve mentioned, a real surprise and something we've kind of been grappling with in human ecology over the last couple of years. So there's no relationship between activity and population, across populations in terms of energy expenditure and activity. And as Steve mentioned, what we think is going on instead is that rather than activity expenditures adding up on top of our budgets, they're carving in to the energy that we have for everything else. So there must be reduced energy for other things like reproduction and immune function in these highly active populations. I was disappointed that Steve didn't show that. So Steve, you need to fix the dots on that graph so they line up better. Thanks. Okay. Last thing I want to tackle, though, more relevant to this conference maybe, is this. Again, humans have this high metabolic rate. We've evolved this high cost, a lot of energy per day, and a lot of that's born on the backs of high physical activity levels, like Dan mentioned, for a lot of energy spent being active. Why? As Carl mentioned earlier, brains are expensive, activity's expensive. Why would evolution favor an expensive set of solutions? And so that's something that we're trying to think about now. And so what I'm going to show you right now is data that we're still working on, kind of data in progress, but stuff I'm excited to talk about, so I wanted to share with you. You don't have to be that active to get food if you are an ape, right? This is figs, and those are also figs. Okay. Here's how we approach this question. We look at the last 7 million years of human evolution, and we've got sort of different chapters here, the early hominin chapter, the Australopithecus chapter, Homo. And it's really within this last 2 million years with the genus Homo that we have brain size expanding mightily, behaviors changing. So we think, if we had to guess, we'd guess that this is when the energy expenditure increases. This is when we become those high-energy apes. And so the question becomes, well, was that a thrifty thing to do? Because we think about evolution as producing thrifty solutions. Or was it an extravagant solution? And, you know, you go back to Darwin, naturally selection is continually trying to economize. We should expect thrifty solutions. But this isn't thrifty. This is high energy. This is more cost. This is a more cost per day. What's going on? Well, one possibility is that, as Carl mentioned, our big brains pay for themselves. And maybe by having smart behaviors, smart cultures, we get this extra energy for free. So you could imagine some amount of energy spent on foraging, walking, digging, all that kind of thing. And that is how you get your food energy. And whatever you acquire is what you get to use for your total energy budget, right? What if stone tools and culture and technology, you add that to the mix and all of a sudden, you don't change foraging energy expenditure, but you just get an expansion of the budget, right? So I didn't spend any more on foraging, but because I had this stone tool, now I could ramp everything up and be this high energy ape. That would make sense evolutionarily because you'll have more energy for big brains and reproduction, all that stuff. Okay. But it doesn't actually cost you any more to do that. We call that the free lunch hypothesis, right? If that's true, then I should see a better ratio of foraging expenditure to total expenditure in humans than in the other apes. Or vice versa, I should see a higher ratio of energy gained to foraging energy put in humans. So we wanted to test that. And I'll go through this quickly because I don't want to keep us too much past our break, but to do this for the apes, to look at this ratio, well, I should just say, what we want to do then is calculate this ratio. We know what TEEs are because we've done that work. We just need to get foraging energy expenditures, and we can calculate these ratios for everybody. So for apes, that's pretty easy. If we know how much they weigh, and we know how much their walking cost is, we know that from other work we've done and from laboratory work, we know how far they go and how much they climb, we can calculate, all the orange here is how much it costs them, these are all scaled bars, how much it costs them to get their energy. And then we can weigh that against what their total energy expenditures are from that doubly labeled work I talked about at the beginning. And that's a ratio we could look at for each of the apes. For humans, we're stuck with a Hadza, sorry. So we're going to do that with them. And we spent the last couple of years putting this together. So we know how much they walk every day. And now we've measured how much it costs to walk. So we have respirometry costs of walking for them. Turns out they're the same as you and me, but we measured it anyway. We've got cost of walking, cost of climbing. We know how much they climb a day, roughly, and we know how much it costs. We've got cost of chopping here, right? So Hadza men chop a lot for honey, so we know how much that costs. I should tell you, these are traces from a respirometry measurements for each of these ones. It's not just a scribble by hand, it's actual data, believe it or not. We've got digging costs, no nice movie for this. So we can actually calculate foraging costs for the Hadza, and they can be our stand-in for what hunter-gatherers look like. Okay. And of course, total energy expenditures, we can do that two ways. We can look at the energy that they actually acquire for their own bodies, or we can add to that the energy that they get because they get more. Humans acquire more energy than they use. So this is how much their body experiences as input, but this is how much they acquire off the landscape as everything altogether, what they burn plus what they are able to share with others. So we can look at this two ways, with either just this by itself or by these together. Okay, and so here's what this looks like. Total energy foraging costs on the left versus what you gain on the right. And as Dan mentioned, much higher total costs for foraging for humans. Even though we have cheap locomotion, we do a lot more of it, so it still costs a lot of energy. And here's the payoff, right? So the ratio of those, of the blue to the orange, is the payoff. So let's do the calculations. And I'll just, if you include provisioning, so if you include all the energy they acquire, humans get about 12 calories out of the landscape for every calorie they put in. That's actually quite similar to what other apes do, right? So our technology doesn't make us any more efficient than gorillas or orangutans, okay? There's no free lunch here. If you look at just the energy that you consume yourself, right? Don't include the energy that you're sharing away, that ratio gets even worse. So this is actually what our bodies experience, is a really low ratio of efficiency. So in other words, humans spend a lot of our energy foraging, and we only get a small amount in return. Now, of course, there's a lot of estimates that go into this, but even if we're off by a couple of integers here, we're still not looking at a nice free lunch. So the free lunch hypothesis, I think, we can knock out. And instead, what seems to be happening is humans have become the gamblers, right? We're gambling. We spend a lot on foraging costs, and that's how we get this high energy budget. This is how we become the high energy apes, is we gamble. We take the risk of putting a lot of energy in up front. So it's sort of a pay-to-play kind of hypothesis. So again, we're in the ideas stage here, so I look forward to talking with you guys after the hearing questions about this after the presentation. Okay, so to take home, we're the high energy ape. We have high energy expenditures. We've ramped up our metabolic rates. Our cells do more work than other ape cells do. And that fuels our big brains and big babies. It also has led to us being fat and social. which is nice. I think we have to, in terms of, you know, thinking about health today, issues that are relevant today, we have to be really aware that physical activity is important for health. Absolutely, like Dan said, that you have to exercise to stay healthy. Absolutely. But specifically when it comes to weight and obesity, we should be careful, because physical activity isn't going to increase your expenditure. That suggests that obesity is an issue of gluttony rather than sloth. And then lastly, we always think about evolution as producing efficient solutions, and usually it does. It has in humans. We have very efficient walkers. But evolution can also be extravagant when the conditions are right. And I think that's an interesting, perhaps useful way to think about our own evolution over the last 2 million years. Like Jean-Jacques started off the conversation this morning, we have our nice cars and our nice houses. We have our big babies and our big brains. All right. So with that, just to acknowledge all the people who have done a lot of work with me on this. It's not a one-man show, tons of colleagues. So I'd like to thank them, and thank you for your attention, and thank you for the organization. Yeah.